Welcome, everybody, to the Diecast Movie Podcast. For this episode, we have a special interview brought to you by my dad. Take it away, Dad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Diecast Movie Podcast, where we do interviews and movies and movie discussions where the genre of the movie is decided by the role of a die. Today, we're doing an interview where I was fortunate enough to interview Xandor Vorkoff, who's going to be coming to Monster Bash this October 13th through the 14th, 2023. He won't be there the 15th. He'll be going home that day, as you'll hear during the interview. That's what I found out also. For those wondering who else is going to be at Monster Bash, go back a few episodes ago. You can listen to Ron Adams and I talk about the Monster Bash October 2023 in the preview. We also talk about the wonderful movie, Dr. X. You can also listen to my interview with Gregory Moffat. And you can listen to my interview with Bob Furmanek, who did the robot monster restoration that everybody will be watching on October 14th. And just to give everybody a little heads up, a little advance notice, the episode that's going to be following this one is going to be my interview of Tony Isabella, who will also be at Monster Bash. So that way you guys will have a good idea who's coming and a little prep. So when you go to talk to them, you know different things to talk to them about if you're not familiar with them. And in this interview, Xandor and I will not just talk about Frankenstein versus Dracula, but we'll talk about what led him into acting, his love for theater, and what he plans on doing in the future. And how basically the world could use a lot more kindness. Before the interview starts, I'm gonna play the Monster Bash promo. And right after that, we're gonna go right into with Xandor. I hope everybody enjoys.
Here comes Monster Bash to the Marriott Pittsburgh North. This October 13th, 14th, and 15th. Guest movie and TV stars signing autographs. 150 vendor tables of cool, new, and vintage monster movie merchandise. Toys, model kits, monster magazines, comics, DVDs, Blu-rays, VHS tapes, T-shirts, and so much more. Guest stars signing autographs include Greg Moffat from the low-budget classic Robot Monster, The Adventures of Superman, Science Fiction Theater, and more. Linda Miller, the star of King Kong Escapes, and featured in the cult classic film The Green Slime. Carl Craig, child star of the Gamera Japanese Giant Monster Fest, Destroy All Planets. Tony Isabella, iconic Marvel Comics writer and editor, known for Dracula Lives, Ghost Rider, The Amazing Spider-Man, Tales of the Zombie, and more. Xander Vorkoff, star of Dracula vs. Frankenstein, will be bashing.
The 1970s Dracula.
TV horror host favorites, Ohio TV legend Son of Ghoul. Plus, Drac and Countess Carita. Meet them all, see special events, talks, and shop wall-to-wall monster movie collectible vendors. Admission is $25 a day or $60 for the whole weekend of entertainment. Discounts available in advance online at monsterbash.us or creepyclassics.com. It's Monster Bash, October 13th through the 15th, 2023, at the Pittsburgh Marriott North in Cranberry Township, Pennsylvania. Don't scare, miss it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Diecast Movie Podcast. And today I'm going to be joined with Xandor Vorkoff, who most of you probably remember, Dracula versus Frankenstein. He's going to be coming to Monster Bash this October 13th through the 15th, 2023. So if you want to come see him in person to see the count, feel free to come to Monster Bash up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and you'll get to see him all weekend. But how are you doing today, Xandor?
I'm fine. Let me right off the bat. I'm only going to be there Friday and Saturday. I won't be there Sunday. So as long as people are hearing and figure they're going to come there, I won't be there.
All right. Woo. Well, I'm glad you said that because I didn't know. So yeah, so he'll be there on Friday and Saturday, October 13th and the 14th. So
correct.
Definitely get there so you can see him on those 2 days. You were there last year at the Monster Bash, and I got to meet you for the first time, and I thought you were cool. You had the cape on. You had the ring. You were doing your thing. And it was, I think everybody enjoyed it and had a lot of fun.
Yeah, including me.
And I think that, isn't that one of the things that a lot of actors get to enjoy is when you go to conventions, you get to feel how people enjoyed your work that from years before.
Well, yeah, that's definitely the plus. I mean, given the fact that I kind of hesitated for a long time because I had other things I was doing and I wasn't really aligned to the horror modality and circumstance and people, brought me out. And I think listening to people's stories as they came and met me, their background and the relationship they had having seen this film, which was out of the box, and my portrayal and my look was out of the box. So, I love stories, so that was one of the bonuses.
Oh, I think so. And I told you this at the Monster Bash. I'm sure you don't remember, but everybody has their own Dracula when they saw when they're growing up. And I was at the right age at the right time seeing Dracula versus Frankenstein on TV. And your look with the hair and the goatee and that kind of stuff and the reverb they had going with your voice, it just to me was like, oh, this is so cool. You were like, so you to me were the cool Dracula.
Yeah, that's cool. No, Al Adamson, may he rest in peace, the director, really had a sense. He had a great sense of things. And I know when I met with he and Sam way back before that, and they were, lamenting the fact that John Carradine wasn't available, Al kind of looked at me and said, you would be good in this. And Sam said, nobody knows him. They know Carradine. And Al said, no, I have a feeling about this. And boy, did he. It really bore a lot of fruit.
Well, I definitely think he knew what he was doing when he picked you. And I don't know. Yes, the people can look at the movie and say there are shortcomings in it, and that is true. But I still enjoy it, and my son enjoys watching it with me, and he's coming to this year's Monster Bash. You get to meet him, and it's a movie that it came out 1971. So we're talking over 50 years ago, and people still enjoy it.
Yeah, amazing.
But before we get more into Dracula versus Frankenstein, I want to talk about what led you to go into acting. Was it something that you saw when you were growing up, or you just had that acting bug all for your childhood? I'm kind of curious what led you to go down this path.
Quite frankly, I don't really remember, but I know there was something about, I guess I started acting out, as a kid, you do silly things. And if you begin to get a reaction when you're only goofing around being a kid and people start laughing or saying things, and then you begin to notice that, hey, something's going on here. And you want to I guess have some kind of an identity even at a young age, not really knowing. Like you're young, you want to have friends, you want to be liked, the standard things we all go through. And so I think that this is off the top of my head. I've never thought about it before. I think that may be the determining factor, and that led into more things. And my father, when I got a little older, I think he wanted to do something like that, but he never got to. So when I got to an age of availability, he saw me in a community theater presentation, a very dramatic thing. And I went out, I came on in the second act, and he was sitting there with his wife, he told me afterwards he was enjoying the performance and hoping when I came out that I would blow it, and he was very pleased that I didn't. He took me out for to eat afterwards. I guess I made a hit. So it made it easy for him to support the next step, which he had me. We lived in Cleveland, Ohio. So I there was the famous Cleveland Playhouse. And I ended up going there as an apprentice, and I had a really good experience there, and things led to me going out to Hollywood to study, and it just kind of unfolded through a number of years. It led to the fact that I do the thing that I'm most pleased with, which is called playback theater. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Playback theater, I'm not as familiar with. If you want to enlighten us.
Well, playback theater has been around for about 50 years also. It's a form of improvisational theater that plays back people's real life stories. There's no real costumes. The lights are on. It's ensemble playing. There's not really any stars. And people listen, develop a listening skill, and play out various versions of a story someone would tell. And it's a wonderful, real-life, people-oriented kind of theater that honors people's story. And I'm really into that more than traditional stuff. It's fun to do a story on screen or in the theater, you know, scripted theater, but I really kind of left all of that, and I'm still doing a little playback.
Because I think you helped co-found the Asheville Playback Theater, correct?
Well, yeah, I definitely founded that. That was in, I forget, 1960-something. I've lost track of the time. And I led that theater company for almost 20 years until I left Asheville. And I do a bit here and there. And it's nice. In fact, I'm going to be doing that this Thursday here at Marquette University, where I'm going to be I'm the guest speaker, not specifically Xandor oriented, but you know, having to do with things that I did with playback way back when that has to do with peace in the world. There's an other side to all of us.
Because mm-hmm. As I say, during your run, if I read correctly, you know, one of the key things you were looking for was kindness and trying to promote, you know, the kindness that people would have with each other, and even working in part with the United Nations on issues of human rights.
Yeah. I created a global playback performance about, I guess it's 20 years ago, and the theme that I came up was, I was actually looking to do something more socially relevant, you know, dealing with all the trauma in the world, and the man who created playback in the first place, Jonathan Fox, he said, you know, start smaller. Don't get into big issues. You know, find something that's meaningful. And I came up with stories of kindness and missed opportunities for kindness. And by the time I got done producing it, there were 80. Playback is all over the world. And there were 80 playback companies on 6 continents you know, joining together on that theme. We were standing in unity, and it was interesting hearing the feedback from the different cultures. So, yeah, that led to actually me being here at Marquette, because they're we're working with the Center for Peacemaking.
That I find that one of the noble things to do is to take acting and to try to help people learn, you know, because it depends on what age group you're teaching, but even if it can be somebody that's an adult, and it's still important for them to remember lessons that they learned as a child or should have learned about trying to be more kind to everybody. And I really believe if everybody was kinder to everybody that they know and people that they even don't know, that the whole world would be a better place.
I ditto that. And you know, it's not a hard thing to do, even if you have, you know, a terrible upbringing or, you know, whatever the circumstances. All it takes is a smile or a hello. I mean, you make somebody's day. And a lot of people do that. I know a lot of people I see on, who are living on the streets. You walk by and say hi, and they just get in a conversation, and they're, you know, they're just happy, and, you know, they offer good stuff. I mean, people are people. Circumstances aren't always of our choosing.
Oh, I agree. And I think part of your thing when you were doing your, or still doing, your educational settings included doing it not just in festivals or at colleges, but you also went to prisons to help.
Yeah, I did. We did a lot of prison work. Yeah.
And so what was that like? How much of an impact do you feel you had?
Well, I know we had an impact, because that's not the normal thing. What we did wasn't normal in any of the prisons we worked in. So it was a big eye opener for some of these prisoners. But I remember we were in a maximum security prison. And I was standing with my fellow performers, because you stand and listen to their stories, and they kind of get a sense of you, and they determine who they want to play you and who they want to play the other people and all the other parts of their story. And I can remember holding my stomach as I stood there as I heard this man's story. And we played back the story, and here is a, you know, hardened prisoner who was a human being. He just came apart, and he said, you know, I've held that story inside of me for 35 years, and I feel freer now than I ever have, you know. So I got definite confirmation of something very harsh.
That is, it's hard to put into words, but just to know that you're able to touch somebody in such a way. And I think that's one of the lovely things about live theater, is you get to see the impact you're having with the audience as you're doing it. And you can get that feedback in real time.
It's so important.
And with the work that you're doing and trying to spread the kindness, I think that is just a vital thing to get across. It's just as important today as when playback theater was started, from my opinion.
Yeah, and just one other thing. The one thing that's specific about playback is people get to be heard. They get to share, whether they're telling a big story or a small story. You've got a bunch of people sitting there with the lights on, and it's not darkened theater. And this is a theater of neighbors that Jonathan called it. And it is. People, you know, not everybody gets to tell a story because of time limitations, but the overarching thing is, you know, our stories are similar, even though I didn't get to, you know, tell my story. What I just heard was similar to something that may have happened in my life too. So it is a theater of neighbors, and it's really something very special.
It sounds it, and I have to seek out to see if there is a if any playback theater type things are going on in my area. And
just Google it. Yeah, Google it. It's all over the world.
Oh, I'm going to be doing that after we're done the interview and stuff like that. Okay. I'm really, because my daughter has a theater degree. She was in the she's behind the scenes. So she was always doing the stuff like props and all those things. And my son did some acting in theater, like in high school and a little bit in college. So we're like a theater family. So I really appreciate how people can do that and put that truth out there night after night, you know, going out there in a live audience and giving that story. And of course, it could be a written story that's already done ahead of time that they're doing over and over, and they try to find that truth in the characters they're doing, or as you're doing with your playback, it seems to be more of a variety that's particular to that night's performance.
interesting conversation having to do with Dracula, isn't it?
It is. It is. And, but it's like when you and I are messaging back and forward, I really enjoy getting into sometimes the acting part, because a lot of people don't realize it. There are a lot of people that still don't go to live theater and find different things. So I think sometimes it's good to talk about both worlds.
Yeah. And that's, you know, like I said earlier, you know, that's what I enjoy about doing these horror conventions now, is that I hear people talk about their stories and how they got into it and so on. How did you get into, you know, the horror genre?
How did I get into the horror genre?
Yeah.
Pretty much it was like when I was a child. My eldest brother is 8 years older than I am, so I was probably watching certain horror films younger than I should have, but I think it was one of those, you're doing stuff with your brother. So they have a middle brother also. So you're getting to watch these different things, and, you know, sometimes you're watching from behind the couch because you're scared.
And, right.
And there's other times you're just laughing at the impossibility of it all. But when you're like 5 years old watching something that's way too young for you, you know, you're just like, you know, really flipping out as you're doing it. But I think part of horror is just that the classical ones, which I consider, like, you know, from the 80s earlier, you know, I consider the classic era pretty broad now as we get older. It's just nice to see. And I think everybody likes to get that thrill, that ride, that suspense and the action in it, and how people are able to overcome the horrific elements. I usually like them best when it's a more of a positive ending or happy ending than the downbeat endings. But I appreciate those too. But I mean, it's nice to see people overcome, because I think it helps us deal with the horrors and stuff that we see in real life and have that break and realize that we can overcome these things.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting. My wife tells the same story. You know, she didn't know I did this. And when we were married 10 years ago, and once she discovered that because of the all the emails and things that were coming my way, that I had this background, she had seen this movie, not knowing that I was in it, because it was so long ago. But she said growing up, her family was into it. And as a kid, you know, her older brothers, you know, would tease her and do some of this, jump out behind her or do silly things, try to scare, but they all shared that, you know, love for just what you were mentioning.
I think everybody has a different story as to how they got into it. But there's a lot of overlap with it, but there's always, as you said, when you're doing your playback, you start with one story and it's close to yours, but it's different to that person. So there's always that percentage of, I understand what they're doing because I've gone through that, but I have it perfectly because the version they did is slightly different than mine.
Right.
Let me reverse the question to you. I mean, obviously, were you a horror fan or a movie, you know, when you were growing up?
No. See, that was what was, I'm trying to remember, you know, actually when Al Adams, when the director said, you know, he'll do this, he said it to his partner, and I said, I don't care for this at all. It's not something I pay attention to. I don't go to movies that are violent or horror movies. And my friends and family, when they saw the movie I made, they said, how did you do that ending? If, you know, you're not that kind of person. I said, I guess I just got caught up in the whole thing. And to me, it was just acting. And in hindsight, it was, you know, it was good for, you know, people who love this kind of stuff. But if I was necessarily showing my son or daughter, which I don't have, but if I had a son and daughter and I, it was, look what dad did, they'd go, oh, you know, oh, how did you do that? It's terrible, you know, and it's like, oh, I better rethink this, you know. But it was acting, and it seemed to have had quite an impact.
Oh, I'll say it has, because as we said, the movie came out in like 1971, and just recently, the last year or two, it had a pristine cleanup and a restoration of the print with a Blu-ray version. So it's looking as good as it's ever been seen before, and people can really get a chance to enjoy it. And you got to play Count Dracula, so you're one of the Count Draculas, you know, like John Carradine, Bela Lugosi, Christopher Lee. And what's that been like for you, knowing now, you know, that you might not have known at the time, I guess, but did you know at the time, you know, you're taking over doing such an iconic role, or did it something that came to you years later?
Well, it's come to me, you know, more and more recently, because I've only been, you know, involved in the meeting and the greeting people and hearing feedback and accolades, you know, from a few people that, you know, I have become that. And a man who helps to promote me, I'm trying to remember how he put it, along the same lines of what you were saying, that he was pointing that direction, and my wife also speaks to that because she's still a horror fan.
Well, you know, I'm a fan of all types of movies, so and horror being one of them. So it's kind of, you know, I'm always interesting how people get into different things, and how certain actors end up in certain roles. Obviously, Al Adamson was a big proponent of you getting the role. And what was it like during the filming of the film? You know, what was it, you know, for you, you know, and do you have any memories?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, filming is work, you know, and there were, you know, long hours and waiting and sitting and, you know, lots of different elements play into it. But I was, you know, once I commit to something, you know, I do the best I can, and I kind of got caught up. You know, it was something I'd done some small things, film things prior to that, but this is the first big thing. You know, I guess, you know, the main thing is so many people have dreamed about going to Hollywood and making a movie, or in bigger terms, being a star, you know, because it has all the trappings that come with it. Until you become a star, and then your life isn't your own anymore. This was different. I was asked to do it, and I didn't immediately say yes. And now that I think about it, yeah, I got to do what so many people dreamed of. It wasn't necessarily the genre I would have chosen, but I make up that nothing happens by chance. It obviously has put me in a place here and now that I'm able to reach people on different levels and, you know, reminding people there's more to it, you know, beyond this. And in fact, I've researched the whole concept of Dracula and what, you know, Stoker created and what he stood for. And a friend of mine and I have written a story, a film treatment that we're calling Dracula Turns, that it's a new kind of Dracula, and it has a whole different, we haven't written the ending because it's open-ended, but basically it's called Dracula Turns because it's reflecting about what's going on in the world now. And if, you know, we're living in dark times, we're living in major evolutionary times, there's a lot of hope on the other end of what's going on, but it's pretty dark. And we made up a story that speaks to this, saying, what if this iconic character, whose primary purpose is to take the life force of people. Blood is the life. And what if there was something that showed up that he began to have an aha moment, as much as a iconic character, movie character, fictitious movie character can have? What if something happens and something changes and he begins to look deep? He looks at the path he's been on. What if, what if, what if? So we've sketched out something that people say, you know, very much like your portrayal, what you've written really has a whole other point of view, and it, the way you wrote it has a lot of really interesting points that we read the film treatment, and we, because it had no happy ending or any kind of ending per se, we kept thinking, well, maybe there's another page, because we wanted to know more. And so people who've read it said, you know, write more, do, maybe we can, you know, get a movie made out of here or something to show people that there can be something at the other end, that it's not just the same old story over and over and over again with different, you know, men playing different part, playing that part. So we're just waiting to see if it's going to get any traction, because it is. It's a time for to have a little hope in this world. And if this kind of a character can make a change, could I?
That concept that you just spoke of is really, it's really interesting to me. You know, it has me wondering too, because yes, people can keep redoing the same thing, you know, and they put a little difference here or a little difference there. But I like your idea of taking the concept, looking at it, and with what's going on currently in the world, and trying to find out how these things would change and alter it. And I could see, you know, you have me curious as to where that would go and how that would happen.
Right.
You have me wondering now too. And I think that's always the good thing, is when you give somebody that little bit of that, what they call it, the elevator pitch, and they're just, they want to know more.
Yeah. Well, that's what we all are hoping to do for those of us who are more invested in not dividing, you know, political parties and cultures and, you know, religion. Everything is being geared to division now, and that's kind of the big game for those who have the power and the money, you know, to stay in control and keep dividing people so they don't have much say-so anymore. And the other side of that is, you know, that can only go so far. I mean, you can do all kinds of terrible things, but there are so many wonderful people who don't go along with it and are trying to do their part to kind of remind people there's a different reality out there, that we all had, you know, meaningful things go on in our lives, and now look what happened. You know, just someone threw a switch, and, you know, we're going to have to get some more light back into the reality, so people have the lives that they were having, and, you know, raising happy children and not having to deal with all this stuff. But it's, you know, we're all part of it, and we each have the opportunity to do our part, you know. So this is how I get to do it. You know, I never expected that this would be the way that would be available to me to share what's in my heart, you know. And so I'm embracing it 100%, and I'm thankful to be able to talk to people and to do these interviews. I'm not going to talk about, yeah, it was fun biting the so-and-so. I mean, that's been done. So I did it in a different way because of the way that Sam and Al created it. And I'm very thankful that it touched so many people that we can talk.
Oh, I agree. And one thing I'm curious about as most listeners probably know, Xandor Vorkoff is not your real name. How did you guys come up with that? Did you come up with it? Was it like a group effort?
No. Forey Ackerman. The story goes that Sam Sherman, you know Sam, right? Mm-hmm. And Forey, who is the man who put me on the cover of Famous Monsters, Sam and Forey and their respective wives were having dinner, and they were talking about, you know, what was going on with the film and me. And they said, well, we've got to give, you know, Raphael Roger Engel, that's the name I have, and we have to get a name for him that's going to be something compelling. And they came up with, I think Sam said that he can, that Forey pretty much came up with it, Forey Ackerman. And it's a combination of, I don't even remember. They're, you know, a real dark person, meaning somebody who actually was a human being, but dealt with the darkness. And I think it was, Boris Karloff. They said it sounded like Karloff, so Vorkoff. How it sounds that way completely is news to me, but that's the story I was told. So Xandor has become my alter ego.
It's such a cool sounding name. So, and Forey Ackerman, of course, with Famous Monsters of Filmland, was always used to coming up with puns and other things. So I guess you couldn't get a better person to come up with a stage name for.
Right.
You.
Yeah. So there you have it.
And during the movie, what was it like? Because you have, like I said, the cool costume. You have the look. And you still have the look, because I saw you, I met you last year. You know, you still can pull off everything. Well, when you had the makeup and costume and on, how did that help you with your performance?
Quite frankly, it never occurred to me. I mean, someone asked me something similar. How did you prepare for the part? And, you know, I don't know if you know, but I wore the cape in the film that was worn by Bela Lugosi and Abbott and Costello meet Dracula, I guess. I forgot.
Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein.
Yeah, right. So that so I wore that cape, and so I said, you know, I put on the cape and I did the job. You know,
I mean, you know, sometimes it's just that easy. I know one time when I played a Centurion, it was cool when I got to put the costume on. You really felt like you were more in that role than when you were rehearsing it. So that's why I wasn't sure if everybody's different.
Well, I think that's true, though. I mean, I don't, I can't remember wearing a cape in my life for any reason. So I'm sure it was in the back of my awareness. You know, this is the cape that Lugosi wore. But when it came time to do the work, I wasn't thinking about that. You know, I remember when one of the people on the set, when I came out with Strickfadden's, you know, electrical background, they said, hey, Drax, stay away from it. That stuff's really live. You know, if you get too close, you'll go up in flames. So, you know, that's as much a reminder of, oh, I got a cape on, you know.
Well, do you have any memories of some of the people that you worked with in the cast, like J. Carroll Nash or anybody that was in the movie?
Well, I have a variety of memories, but I guess Gina. Gina, you know, is this Vegas showgirl, you know, everything that a movie star looks like, and she was as sweet and kind as can be. And when I spent time with her, you know, off set and, you know, at their house, she knew I had done theater, so she wanted to talk about theater because her dream was to work with kids, mm-hmm. and she never got to do it.
Well, that's a shame, you know, because with your theater thing, it could have been perfect for her to have that accessibility.
Well, I'm thinking about Gina. She passed away from too many cigarettes.
Oh, it's such a shame when people, for various, like whether it's cigarettes or other substances, you know, it's a shame when they do those things and they leave us early.
Yeah.
When you're working on the movie and doing different things, I know you had to work with two different actors that played the monster, the Frankenstein monster. One, for most of the movie, was John Bloom, and then when they had to reshoot the ending in New York, it was Shelley Weiss. And I believe you're the one that got him into the role.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine. He's a larger-than-life person. He's not with us anymore either. And he loved this stuff. And when I think Sam called me and said we have to reshoot the ending, you know anybody? And I said, oh, yeah, I know a big guy. He's not as big as John. And I told Shelley, and he became a little boy. He said, oh, my God, you know, and he just had the greatest time.
Because that's always the scene in New York. I remember there was, when I saw this as a boy, and for decades until I saw the movie again, there was two scenes I always remembered. And one of them was when you are ripping the Frankenstein monster apart. Because that was the first time I saw Dracula as being a badass. You know, he's like, I'm just going to take you apart, you know, limb to limb. I was just like, oh, that is cool.
Yeah, well, that was Sam Sherman. He came up with all of this stuff.
Well, for a boy, I was just enjoying that part. And the other part was Lon Chaney Jr.'s character after he died and the puppy was licking him. You know, I was just...
Oh, yeah.
That hit me at the heart. It was just like, oh, yeah. Poor puppy.
Yeah.
Did you have any opportunities to interact with Lon Chaney?
No, this was... we were brought in. John and I were brought in at the end when three separate movies edited together. You know, Russ Tamblyn did really well in a biker movie prior to that. And so they decided that, well, let's do another biker movie different. And the investors didn't like it at all. And then they had another one they were doing. And the investor says, forget it. And this is the story I heard. And you know, has a knack for this stuff. He's very well trained in the world of film. And he told me he was watching, this. Actually, I think it's on the, let me finish and I'll tell you where it is. And he realized that, or he seemed to think that there had never been something like Dracula and pitted against Frankenstein. So he wrote it. And I think David Gregory of Severn Films made this wonderful documentary about Al Adamson's life. And I think this is spoken in have you seen that film?
No, I haven't seen the one about Al Adamson yet.
It's a wonderful film. It's a documentary. It has a lot of twists and turns, and it really gives you a sense of what it takes to make a movie. They worked hard to get this stuff done, and they were chastised for, you know, being low grade and stuff like that. And Al's response is, you know, we've made more movies than a lot of people, and people just talk about it. We're here to entertain people. That's what we're here. And this is the vehicle we're doing it with, you know?
Yeah. Cause there are a lot of people that complain about it or belittle it, never have made a movie. And they think it's so easy. And then when they try to, they find out how difficult it is to get all the way through to the end. And like I said before, there are aspects. I mean, it's not a great movie, but it's an enjoyable movie that I enjoy. It fits my taste. So, and I have fun with it. So I got to give him credit. He succeeded with me.
That's right. And a lot of people say that, you know.
If you could do me one thing to end, you know, if you or if you feel
yeah,
up to,
I know what you mean. Hold on, I have to read.
Okay.
I am the Count of Darkness, the Lord of the Manor of Carpathia. I bid you welcome, and I bid you adieu.
And ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Xandor for coming on again. And again, October 13th and the 14th, he'll be at Monster Bash. He's not going to be there for the 15th. So come to Monster Bash this year, 2023, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and you'll get to meet him. And Xandor, I want to thank you again for joining me. I'm looking forward to meeting you again this year.
Okay. Well, thank you, Stephen, and see you later.
See you later. I hope everybody enjoyed the interview with Xandor Vorkoff. And again, I'm looking forward to seeing him and meeting him again at Monster Bash. I met him last year, and I'm looking forward to meeting him this year again, October 13th and 14th, 2023, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Just to remind everybody that if you have any feedback, please send us an email at diecastmoviepodcast@gmail.com or leave us a message on our Facebook page. I want to thank everybody for listening, and I hope everybody's having a good day. And we're going to end the episode by listening to the TV promo for Frankenstein versus Dracula. Hope everybody has a good day. Bye.
10 dead men's bodies were used to fashion Dr. Frankenstein's infamous creature. Tens of dozens of victims have kept Count Dracula alive for 3 centuries. Only one of these beings will survive their meeting.
All new, different, shocking. You've never seen anything like Dracula versus Frankenstein. In color, rated GP.